Extraction number 12708, Mr. R.W. Hawksworth, Reel 1.
Mr. R.W. Hawksworth, Reel 1. Where were you born, Mr. Hawksworth?
In Hull.
And the date of birth?
The 13th of September, 1920.
How many others were there in the family?
Five altogether.
And they were made up of?
Well, I was the eldest. I was the first born, so I was the eldest son. I had two brothers and two sisters who followed me.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a railway shunter.
Did your mother work?
Previously, or prior to being married to my dad, she'd been in private service, a maid.
The area you were living in, what kind of an area was it?
Oh, the working class district along Hessel Road in Hull. Down a street where I was born, Bean Street, most of the inhabitants were railway workers. On the other side of the Hessel Road, the fish dock workers inhabited most of the properties.
Was it a pretty hard, tough life?
Well, it wasn't cushy. Everybody was working, apart from the ladies, of course, in those days, didn't go out to work as much as they do nowadays. But I wouldn't say it was tough. It wasn't what we would now call a tough area. It was quite pleasant, in actual fact.
What kind of wages was your father bringing in?
Meagre. I've hazard a guess now, and I think the father's wage was something like £3.17 a week as a railway shunter.
Could you afford things like annual holidays?
Well, my parents managed it anyway. I don't know how they managed it, but as the family grew, I suppose the financial difficulties became larger, but we managed to get away to the seaside every year, at least for 2 weeks. To the local seaside resort, Withernsea.
How did you occupy your leisure time as a child?
Like most of the other boys, I think. Going to the docks, watching the ships, of which there were plenty. Climbing into people's orchard and pinching their apples. And I took up freshwater fishing with a homemade rod and maggots and whatever.
How old were you when you went to school?
I started primary school when I was five.
And the school you went to, what was its name?
Sena Street on Anlevy Road. It's no longer a school, it's a co-educational centre or some strange thing, but that was the primary school I started at.
What was life like in school itself, discipline and so forth?
It was quite a well-regulated school, as far as I remember. All the teachers were female, the headmistress, Miss Elsom. We had Monday morning assemblies when we used to have a small sort of a religious service and sang hymns. But I think I quite enjoyed it. It was quite a nice school, quite a pleasant time.
Looking back, did you feel that you got a good education?
Adequate. Adequate.
Did you change schools at any time?
Yes, when the time came for me to leave primary school, I had a scholarship, but unfortunately I wasn't clever enough to pass with sufficient marks to go on to a technical school, and so I was put into a central school where life became a bit stricter. All the masters were ex-army people, or certainly from the forces, but I thoroughly enjoyed the 3 years I was there and I learnt quite a lot.
Was it an education that prepared you for life afterwards?
Quite honestly, I don't think it did. I think I learnt more having left school than I did whilst I was attending.
When did you commence your first job?
Oh, I was 15 and a half, having left school, and I went to be an apprentice boy painter and decorator to one of the local firms in Hull. Chapman and Son on Beverley Road, a high-class firm, a reputable firm.
Did your parents influence your choice of job?
Not at all. No, not at all. I had the end to do something in this line, and my father encouraged me, in fact, along this road, and he took me to the owner or the director of the firm and got me the job.
What hours did you work?
8 until 5, with an hour for lunch.
Was that a 5-day or 6-day week?
5-day week.
Do you recall your first wage?
10 and 6. 10 and 6 a week.
Yeah. What length of annual holiday did you get in your company?
At the painter's firm, a fortnight. Fortnight paid.
And did that take you anywhere? Did you stay at home?
Oh, I used to go out daily on my father's bicycle. At that time I was saving up to buy my own. But I spent most of my time out cycling.
Did you get involved in trade unions or anything like that?
No.
Was it a hard apprenticeship, this?
No, it's quite easy. The men of the firm were quite helpful. There were 6 apprentice boys, apart from myself, who made the 7th, and we were greatly assisted by the men.
Did you complete your apprenticeship?
No. I was there until the winter of the year I joined, when, much to my amazement and sorrow, I noticed that most of the men were laid off because, on account of the weather conditions, there was no work to be done outside, and only the more skillful operators were kept on to work indoors at various places. I became disillusioned and told my parents I would like to look elsewhere for a different job.
Before we move on to that, during your boyhood, childhood, had you become involved in anything like the Boy Scouts or the Boys Brigade?
Oh, yes. I joined the local Boy Scout troop, the Wellington troop, when I was 12 or 13. I attended regularly and went to annual camp with them.
Where did you meet?
We had a meeting place above a taxi firm on Heddle Road, a barn of a place which one entered by travelling up a huge flight of wooden steps, I remember. And there were maybe 30 or 40 of us in that troop at the time.
Did your parents influence you joining?
Yes, my mother wanted me to join something of that sort, the Boys Brigade or the Boy Scout. And I think the Boy Scout uniform attracted me. And that's why I went in.
What was the uniform you wore in those days?
We wore a Stetson type of hat, the old style Boy Scout hat. I think it was a green jersey, a yellow neckerchief, khaki shorts, green socks and boots or shoes, with a belt, bearing the Boy Scouts motto, of course.
Was the uniform free, or did you have to buy it?
No, we had to buy the uniform.
And your parents were able to do this?
Yes, they managed. They managed to do that.
How often during the week did you meet?
Once a week. It was on, if I remember correctly, Thursday evening we met at 7:30, and we stayed on until about 9 p.m.
What kind of activities did you do?
Well, we were taught to tie various knots, how to shorten ropes, and bits of first aid. We also did a bit of drill. One of the scoutmaster's junior assistants had been an ex-serviceman, and another one was a serving policeman. So we were in good hands as far as that was that was concerned.
Was there a code of behaviour that you were expected to follow?
Yes, there was. Bad language was absolutely forbidden. No one was allowed to even possess cigarettes or any form of tobacco, so smoking was absolutely out. And we were expected to respect each other as well as the scoutmasters and the assistants.
You said you went to annual camp. What time of the year would that be?
July or August.
And what were the activities in camp?
Well, we went out on nature rambles. We were taught initially how to pitch a tent properly, how to strike it, how to build a fire, which is an old joke, you know, the one about rubbing two Boy Scouts together to get a spark going. And we were near to the sea in our campsite, so we went seabirding quite a lot.
Were the sites far away from Hull?
About 18 miles.
How did you take to the discipline within the group?
Well, quite naturally, no bother at all.
You said that you changed your job. What kind of date would this be?
Ooh. By the year, you mean? In 1933 or 1934. As I previously mentioned, my father was employed by the London North Eastern Railway. And when he found that my attitude toward the painter and decorator's job wasn't all that it should be, he succeeded in finding me a post with the railway in one of the local warehouses. I was given a ticketing job, which entailed making out destination tickets and fastening on the clips on the goods trains.
Did you like this kind of work?
I really enjoyed it, very much indeed. Yeah.
Was an uplift in your wage as well?
Oh yes, I got nearly twice as much. I got more than £1 a week when I started on the railway, and it increased to 30 shillings.
Were there perks or gifts which, being a railway worker, you got?
Yes, being a railway employee, I was entitled to travel at quarter fare on the railway. But unlike my father, who got free passes, I wasn't old enough to take advantage of that.
How long did you continue in this work?
For about a year. I was moved from the ticketing job onto one of the local docks and given a more dangerous job known as capstan running. This entailed fastening hooks onto wagons, which in turn were attached to ropes, and the capstan man would bring the wagons onto the ship's side for discharging or loading, whatever. And when the mother found out the sort of work I was doing, she called a halt.
So what did you do then?
Well, they decided it was time I went on a holiday, so I was I went down with my father to Blackdown Camp in Hampshire, near Brookwood, where the Durhamite Infantry were stationed, to stay with my uncle, who was at that time a colour sergeant in the battalion. And that's where I first got the idea of becoming a soldier.
Do you recall what was going on then, at that time, down in Blackdown, that you were watching and seeing?
Oh, yes. It was. I stayed in the Murray quarters with my aunt and uncle, and I was free to move around the barrack area. I made friends with some of the band boys of the Durhams, met the bandmaster, Mr. Rippon, who asked me when I was coming in to join. I played hockey with the boys, and I went out in the woods on rambles with them, and had a thoroughly good time.
So what then happened to you?
Well, the fortnight passed by quite quickly. The time does when one's enjoying oneself, but eventually the time came for me to go back home, and so off back I went up to Yorkshire. But later in the year, I went back down again for a week leave, about November, and That's when my mind was made up. I made up my mind as soon as I landed back at my uncle's house that I wanted to join the army. I mentioned this to him and my aunt. They were both pleased but said I needed my parents' permission. And so without any further ado, they got in touch with my parents and they said, if that's what I wanted to do, fair do. And so I went off to Waldershot the following day and joined up.
What was your uncle's name?
John Rosendale.
What date was this?
November the 11th, 1936, at the recruiting office in Aldershot.
What was the process of joining up in the regular army?
Well, I was joining as an enlisted boy. Therefore, I had to have one of my parents or a guardian with me. So my aunt came to Aldershot with me to the recruiting office, where the usual rigmarole took place. An interview with an officer, with a rather large guards recruiting sergeant standing beside him, and they told me that once I'd signed, I was in. It was a contract and binding, and that I had a few minutes to consider. And I told them I didn't need any time to consider, and my mind was made up, and that's why I'd come to Aldershot to join. Shortly after that, I was given a medical by a medical officer, a short oral examination, and a few written questions. I then signed an attestation form, and I was given a shilling, which was known in those days as the King's Shilling, which every recruit was given. So from that time on, I was in as a band boy in the 1st Battalion Durham Light Infantry, although efforts were made by another recruiting sergeant to get me into the Royal Marines Band. I said that I'd come down to join as a recruit and into the Durham Light Infantry, or I wasn't coming in at all.
The medical you got, was it pretty extensive?
No, it wasn't nearly as thorough as the medical inspection one gets these days.
You said you were going to the band. Had you any musical background?
I'd never played an instrument, but my father was a military band enthusiast and had lots of gramophone records, which I like to listen to with him. I suppose I had a musical aptitude, but no skill at all.
Did you, when you signed your attestation form, did you then go back to your aunt's home?
Yes, I was told that I could return home or to my aunt's home, and I'd receive instructions locally from the battalion orderly room, which in fact took place 2 days later, when I was sent for by the quartermaster and issued with all my clothing and items of kit.
What were you issued with?
Well, first of all, the khaki uniform, which in those days consisted of a superfine peak cap, a tunic and trousers, the tunic which carried an enormous amount of brass buttons and badges in the collar, except on the epaulets, etc. Trousers, and in those days, the soldiers in most infantry battalions wore shortened trousers above the knee with long putties. And, of course, the boots, which are known in those days for some unknown reason as ammunition boots. Other items of kit included underwear, shirts, socks, etc. There were no ties or collars in those days because the tunics were fastened tight at the neck. Razor comb, lather brush, a small item of equipment called a hussif, which was a shortened version of housewife, which contained needles and threads and bobbins of cotton and odd buttons. Everything that a person needed to look after himself in the barrack room.
Were there items of equipment that you were given?
Yes, the equipment was similar to the chap that the chaps were issued with, but being boys, we weren't considered tall enough nor strong enough to carry a full pack or haversack. So we had a modified cut-down scale of equipment, which consisted of a waist belt, a haversack, which hung on the side, and a water bottle. A ground sheet and a greatcoat were the heaviest pieces of equipment we had.
And you were received into Blackdown Barracks?
At Blackdown Camp, yes.
What was the accommodation like?
It was... The barracks, well, Dettingen barracks, were a modern barracks by their standards in those days, only possibly 5 years old. And the accommodation was good. We were accommodated in long rooms, some 20 or 30 persons to a room. There were no small rooms in those days, of course. They were like dormitories, two-story buildings with a central ablution centre where one got washed and shaved and did all the other sort of things. The barracks were quite airy and easily kept clean.
How many men to a barracks? Or boys in this case?
In the rooms, there were 16 in our room. We were 32 boys on strength, so there were two rooms, each containing 16 boys.
And what did you sleep on?
The sleeping arrangements were known as army cots, made of heavy metal, with a sliding arrangement. During the day, the front part of this cot, or bed frame, would slid underneath the back part, so to create more room. But when one proceeded to make one's bed down, one pulled out the lower half on the castor runners, and there were three small mattresses which one put down on the bed, and then your sheets and blankets went over the top.
Where did you keep your uniform and equipment?
Well, the equipment was hanging on pegs above the bed on the wall behind, beneath a green locker which was fastened to the wall, in which other items, small items of equipment, were kept. The greatcoat was on the one side on a coat hanger, and the ground sheet was rolled tightly placed on the top of the green locker near our mess tin, which one used at camp when one was feeding.
How was the rooms heated?
The heating arrangements were, by modern standards, extremely primitive. In each room there was a large pot-bellied iron stove which was fed coke. Strict regulations were enforced regarding this heating arrangement too. One wasn't allowed to light the fires before a certain time, usually even in the winter before 5 p.m.
How did you keep it clean?
Well, the cleaning arrangements of our living quarters were very carefully scheduled. Each person, each boy, had a different job to do daily. And it usually fell to the latest joined recruit, in my place, the fireplace duty, which was the dirtiest job of the lot. And so the cleaning of the floor, the cleaning out of the stove, the resetting of it, the cleaning of the windows and the washrooms and the toilets were all carried out by the soldiers. There were no civilian staff allowed inside the barrack rooms.
Did you have any equipment to help you do it?
All the necessary equipment was supplied. There was never any shortage of that.
What were they?
Well, for the cleaning of the windows, the metal polish was found to be an adequate agent. I had a hell of a job every morning getting rid of the black lead, because my job entailed black lead in the stove, which had been burning all night, and it was still warm in the morning when I cleaned it out. A large arrangement called a bumper was used for cleaning and polishing the barrack room floors. This job was usually given to the strongest boy in the room, because it was a heavy duty task.
What was a bumper?
A bumper was a piece of equipment, if one could imagine a rectangular block of metal, which was quite heavy, on the underside which was fastened a strip of some sort of cloth, felt, I think it was. And attached to this piece of equipment was a long pole on a hinge. And the operator would push this bumper up and down the floor, creating a shine. Thereafter it had to be swept. And unofficially, to get an even better polish on the floor, one would pinch half a blanket from somewhere or other and use that to tidy the thing up.
As a new boy to the army, Mr. Hawksworth, did you have to put up with any kind of initiation ceremonies?
No, none at all.
Was any bullying?
No, I never experienced any bullying during my boy service.
Did they keep a pretty strict eye upon you because you were boys?
Yes, in each room there was a corporal in charge who ensured that the proper form of discipline was maintained, and at the first sign of any undue behaviour, stamp on it straight away.
Was the gambling taking place? Were you learning things like this?
Two things that stick in my memory as far as the army discipline was concerned, even the early days. The fact that gambling was absolutely forbidden, as was smoking, in fact, as far as boys were concerned. And if anyone was caught in possession of a pack of playing cards, he was brought before the company commander and severely dealt with.
The process of keeping yourselves clean, that's your boots, your brasses, the whole process of keeping yourself army style clean, what was that?
Well, this was taught by elder boys, and we had a senior boy in each room whose duty it was to encourage the new arrivals to look after themselves properly. The equipment, daily equipment we used, of course, was our ordinary khaki clothes and suits of overalls, which were known as canvas jackets in those days. Boots, of course, had to be kept highly polished. And all the equipment necessary for doing this was, as I explained before, issued initially by the quartermaster staff. There was no shortage of metal polish for brass work and buttons, or blanco for the equipment, webbing equipment we had to keep it kept clean. And a strict eye was cast upon these items during daily inspections to make sure that we were doing our job properly.
What colour was the blanco you were using?
It was khaki green in those days.
How did you keep the metal polish safe for doing your badges and buttons off your coat? Or blouse?
There was an item of equipment known as a button stick, which was a strip of brass with a narrow slice taken out of the middle, which this fitted along the buttons. One ran it underneath the buttons until you got them into a bunch. And this kept the metal polish and the button brush away from the uniform.
Obviously, your uniform would have to be ironed regularly. Did you have a personal iron, or was it a block iron within the room itself?
There was no official issue of irons, as I remember, and certainly nothing like an electric steam iron, which one uses in today's daily chores. One or two of the boys returning from leave would bring a flat iron back with them, which was heated on the stove and sometimes used with disastrous effects. The common way a soldier in those days kept his trousers properly creased and jackets was to, before he made his bed, using sheets of cardboard on the cot face, place the trousers suitably damped and place in a properly creased position, and then on top of that he would place his three coir mattresses, and the bedding would go on top of that, and during the night, of course, he would lie on the top. And that's how creases were maintained.